as a community builder, as a professional, connected with so many other people, and it's great, and it's really enriching. But then really having this inner compass, you can work on your values, you can work on more of a rational tools, and you can also just create space to listen to your own voice.
Welcome back to the Own Your Awkward podcast. I'm your host, Andy Vargo, and every episode we get into what has made our guests vulnerable and how they've learned how to own their awkward in order to live their best life. Stay tuned so you can hear every awkward moment in today's show. Hey friends, welcome back to another awkward episode of the Own Your Awkward podcast. I'm super excited today because we have Hannah coming from all the way from Portugal, Hannah Bazad. Hannah, how are you today? Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Andy. I'm wonderful. It's been a great week so far, and I'm looking forward to having this chat with you today.
I am as well. You know what makes this chat so intriguing to me is that we have never spoken before this very moment. So what we are getting is raw, unfiltered, a chance for two people to get to know each other and dive right into some awkward stuff. And I'm so impressed with your presence, what you do online. You're just a very positive person, and that comes through in all the stuff you're doing. I can't wait to see more.
Thank you. Let's get the awkwardness started then.
Let's get to it, right? Awesome. Here we go. Well, in just a second, we're going to find out about your awkward thing. But before we do that, I'm curious, what's like something really amazing going on that you see right now?
Oh, you know, I just finished a conversation with an artist who works at the intersection of, let's say, mimesis from nature and also social inclusion, because she gets her material from cooperatives, women from the Atlas Mountains in Morocco, or some villages in India. And I'm inspired by those people that really go the extra mile to source meticulously and have their whole value chain of whatever they want to create, in this case art, really align with their values and principles. So yeah, so I'm also just out of a year contributing to a project that is at the intersection of conservation and Web3. I was happy to be able to bridge those worlds and see how the blockchain space is getting more and more aware of the role it needs to play in biodiversity preservation. So that is kind of a trend that I'm excited about. I'm excited about a raise in consciousness. I was having this conversation with a few people, interestingly, in Davos, out of all places, at the World Economic Forum just a few weeks ago. So that's also something that brings me a lot of hope and positivity, and feels like, okay, we're at the cusp of something new, and we need to show up. And how do we do this all together, bringing our strengths and showing up our best selves in this context?
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's critical there that how much you point out how much hope everything brings, because it's easy to get caught up in the fear of, oh, what are all the problems ahead of us? Or what are all the things that we wish could be better? But look at all these amazing things people are doing. And look at these people from the art side, to the technology side, to the social economic side of things, and pulling it all together. You know, we have more power than we've ever had to actually solve the problems ahead of us.
I feel like hope is a decision, truly. You know, we are in a very complicated moment in history. I mean, the last few months have given us so much to be afraid of. There are wars. Some people talk about a massive risk of this escalating. And obviously, we've all been impacted. The collective subconscious has been impacted, even if it's far away, and even if you don't have immediate ties. But it's something that is heart-crushing. It's hard to swallow and accept that in this day and age, we're maybe witnessing a genocide without being able to intervene, and also the conversations around terrorism and this ongoing conflict between Palestine and Israel has been, it's tough for everyone. So it's just one example among many, but this has been ongoing since October. So it's it's very difficult. And then you have climate anxiety. We've passed the threshold of 1.5 degrees Celsius and global warming, which is a massive risk. You have, the more you become aware of all this, what's happening, the more you can freak out and lose your balance and lose your center. But what I would say is that it's a choice you make every time. You either add to the your you add your own fears and insecurities to the collective ones, or you decide to use your tools, get trained, get connected with people that are somehow transcending that or transmuting those fears into fuel for action. And that's a choice I've been making over the years as a social entrepreneur, as a change maker. And it's not, it's not something that, okay, you become, it's flowing all the time. You have your ups and downs as every human being, but it's a choice. It's constantly a choice. So whenever I realize I'm kind of like a little bit out of this flow, then I reach out to people. I do more sports. I have a heartwarming conversation. The series of many things that will make me shift my perspective and get rid of like the heaviness and kind of understand that every day you get is a miracle, and then you also have in your hands the possibility to make more miracles happen. So why don't you do it?
Exactly. Now, I have never heard that described that way as hope as a decision. And I hear that commentary when it relates to being in a good mental space, and where if you're feeling down, doing something physical, going out and surrounding yourself by people. But I haven't heard that related to hope. And I just think that that is so powerful to remind ourselves that when we feel kind of despairing and like things are out of touch and we can never get there, to have that list of things to do that we realize, like you said, go play some sports, do something that now puts us back in the mindset of feeling that hope.
Yeah, and also sitting with the difficult emotions. I think, I've given some practical examples, but also sometimes sitting with the anxiety and the fears, and as uncomfortable as it is, thankfully we also have access to a lot more tools around emotional intelligence and personal development, and that helps, I would say. I realized last weekend for me was very it was very difficult. I think a series of things happened in the last few weeks, and I had pent up emotions that were hard, sadness and so on. And I sat with it. I went to a park and I just started crying. And the park was beautiful. It was raining at the same time, so it was very dramatic. And then eventually the next day I felt a bit lighter, and the day after even lighter. And now I'm back into my positivity, and it feels great. I think compassion starts with oneself, and it's also a decision. I think having that sense of agency, we're all subject at the moment or another to being overwhelmed by life in general and by external events, but also by what's going on within us that we don't necessarily have a vocabulary yet to explain or to grasp. But that's part of the human experience. We're never alone. I mean, you and I and everyone listening to this podcast may have at some point experienced something like this, and loneliness as well. And we're all in this together eventually. And that's an interesting contradiction of being a human.
Yeah, that is true. It's both alone but also together. And we may be in our own space in the moment of where we're feeling, but everyone else is going through that same thing and in and out of those spaces. So, all right. Well, shall we get awkward?
Let's get awkward.
All right. Well, I love to know about things. I love to find out people's awkward sides. It's such an interesting experience to learn what's going on behind the scenes with everybody. And the world needs to know that we all have this awkward thing. So Hannah, what has been the awkward thing you've had to kind of overcome or own in order to just be this positive person that you are?
Where do I start? Andy, I actually wrote how many pages? Maybe 240 pages about the awkwardness of being me and being other. But yeah, I grew up in a, so I'm from Morocco, and I grew up in a context that was full of contradictions. It's Morocco is a North African country, Muslim country, but relatively open. And I grew up in a sort of bubble that was where, you know, we were mingling with a lot of diplomats and expatriates, and so I've had exposure to a lot of different cultures growing up. And I went to a French school, and then eventually also American school. And you know, it's a lot of doors that were open for me, so I'm extremely grateful. And at the same time, it posed so many questions around my identity: who am I? How do I belong? How do I act in which context? This approach of code switching, even my language, you know, in Morocco we speak Moroccan Arabic, and it's an Arabic that is so odd to the rest of the Arab world. And then we speak Arabic, but we also include French words and English words now, because the youth has kind of started to embrace English to be able to be more connected with the rest of the world. So I want to say I am from planet awkwardness, you know. And it's a very warm and funny space to be. And then even that, pushing it even forward, after studying in France and the US and starting a career in consulting, I actually had the very awkward idea to come back to my home country, where I knew a lot of challenges would lay ahead, and start my career as an entrepreneur there, as a repatriate entrepreneur. So being the minority of minority of minority. So essentially bringing a coding boot camp, and at the time it felt like, what is going on? This is from somewhere else. Now it's a different market. What's that approach? Teaching it in English, and also setting up a nonprofit, bridging worlds, the rural areas in Morocco, women in the rural areas of Morocco, trying to train them into technology, so that they can, you know, have their dreams fulfilled, have access to more opportunities, develop their cooperatives in a different, with a different approach, and feel empowered. And so I started to have a lot of fun, to be honest, trying to create connections between places that ignored one another, because it was the status quo. Because, you know, it's a, in the case of Morocco, it's a society that is evolving quite fast in many ways, but also has these fractures of inequities, social inequities. And it's true that for a lot of places around the world, but it's very stark in Morocco. And so I started, you know, enjoying that, you know, the creating the unexpected approach of, and making it so cool to actually address the big challenges, the big societal challenges, and then eventually later environmental challenges. I mentioned earlier Web3 and conservation work and so on. And so I think, like other social entrepreneurs, we're trying to, in trying to move away from a system that has been exploitative, that has been hierarchical, that has been patriarchal, that has been also disheartening, to be honest. We're trying to just use some of the frameworks that are effective, and rebuild the entire game so that everyone can play, and we can expand our possibilities for a future that feels hopeful, and where everyone contributes. That's a long answer to your
No, I
question.
love it. And there's a lot of layers there to dig into, and I'm trying to think through where to start as you led with, where do you start when you have so much to share? Did you feel so? You mentioned how you're bringing these different people who may be separate together, and you're able to connect people who may have been ignored or maybe ignored from one segment. How was that taken as you start to make those connections? Were people tentative to be like, ah, I don't play on that side of the fence, or were they eager to jump in?
I think there was a lot of curiosity on every side, also a lot of fears, because eventually, I think somehow once you start a conversation with someone that feels really heart to heart, and like it's beyond title, it's beyond Oh, you, where do you belong in society? Are you from the upper class, from the bourgeoisie, or from a marginalized community or else, which is again very present in Moroccan culture. Once you sit with someone and you look at them in the eyes, and it really feels like a heart to heart, and with all the clumsiness, because I was very clumsy, you know, coming back to Morocco after 10 years abroad, not having a network, having to start from scratch, keeping my French accent in my own, you know, mother tongue, Moroccan Arabic. People were like, what is this creature? What is she trying
Who
to
are
do?
you?
So both on the side that was, you know, again, upper class and people that make decision makers, both on the public space and corporates and on the community work side, people are kind of refreshed when they see in you something that is different and maybe even courageous. And it's an energy that is felt, and it gives them a little bit of a push, you know, as in the wild idea. Everyone has wild ideas and vast imagination and has dreams and hopes, and sometimes they bury them because life becomes day to day too burdensome. It's too heavy, and it's always a struggle. And you hear that a lot as well, again, in Moroccan culture or in the Arab world, there's a sense of fate. I feel like what happened is that some people were truly afraid and would push back, but push back without showing that they would push back. So they would just kind of like not give you what you're asking for in terms of authorizations, in terms of what actually were rights to me, you know, as a but I had to learn kind of like the complexity of the system that is dysfunctional. But those other people they were intrigued, and then eventually they started to be very curious, and they started to feel like there was something there that they needed to engage with, just an energy, to be honest. And then eventually, with time, this nonprofit that I mentioned became an awarded startup. People started to really be proud of it. You know, Morocco has that. Look at this. And many other people that had ideas a little bit in that vein started to do the same. So sometimes it's about just opening the possibility and walking the path, and you'll see that many other people, you are unlocking opportunities for many other people that had that in them already. So that's what I've been witnessing in Morocco. And then what gave me hope and what gave me fuel is to see that happening in the rest of the continent, because of course, again, I'm only human, and so many times I would feel defeated, but then the universe would bring to my attention the fact that there was this network, this alliance of other entrepreneurs trying to push for the adoption of at startup acts or public policies for innovation, and having the chance to be invited in those places and engage with those entrepreneurs, you feel like, okay, so there's actually a bunch of people that are trying to do things, and they're very talented, and they're visionaries, and I want to, yeah, kind of be part of that. So I'll keep up the work until I start to see results, and that's what happened with my journey in Morocco, definitely, and the rest of the continent, moving to Rwanda and working with governments as part of a Pan-African organization called Smart Africa, moving back to Europe even, and here in Portugal, I've engaged with a number of startups in the space of regenerative agriculture or again Web3, the regens, and it's really cool. It's a lot of there's a lot that is happening. A lot of really smart people are trying to envision a different futures full of possibilities for the vast majority, and that is super fantastic.
Yeah, and I do think that once you start to hear other people's voices, it gives more power to your voice. Like you realize, wait, someone else is also speaking up. Someone else is also trying to make a difference. Maybe I'm not as alone as I thought. You know, you mentioned that feeling of kind of being other, and you've talked about that, and that's a big theme. How does that play into your life when you touch so many different cultures and spaces? Does that make it hard for you sometimes to feel like there's a place that's right for Hannah?
Actually, quite the opposite now, but that's because I've gone through the journey. I would say at the start of the adventure of writing my book, it was a moment where I was feeling very much at the crossroads. I had decided, and it was not a light decision to kind of be out of the African continent for a little bit and look back and kind of assess new opportunities in a context that would feel more favorable, where I would have a bit less challenges. And then eventually I started thinking, well, I've always loved writing. I have so many notes from those awkward moments I had to go through as an entrepreneur, as a consultant for African governments, and as this and that, that I may want to kind of put it all together to bring out the lessons of it. And so there started the idea of writing this book. And the book at the beginning felt, I mean, in my perspective, had to be a little bit more academic because I had to kind of establish an authority. So I had a title in mind, integrity lessons from the beginning, because who was I to even write a book? You know, I was only 10 years into my career and blah, blah, blah. But then eventually in writing the book and then also making it really a professional commitment. So looking for an editor and having found an editor with a publishing house that's female-led, that is dedicated to amplifying diverse voices and starting to work with their team, I kind of realized the book had to be about yes, being what is it to embrace your differences, and what is the Black, Indigenous, and women of color experience in the space of tech and sustainability that is eventually the thread in my career. And what can I bring from my experience, but also from other conversations that really shaped my perspective and sometimes gave me clues that I didn't have. And all of this was really healing because I had to revisit so many situations and read again notes from a time where situations felt so triggering. And then I kind of realized I'm now feeling a lot more comfortable with this. My perspective has shifted. And so what could I say to my younger self that I want now to say to the reader who's maybe a young woman at the start of their career, bi woke or not even a woman, or what do I want to give as in terms of some lessons learned, but also something that feels playful, you know, that is fun, because at the end of the day, it's possible in all the places where we don't feel at home and we have to do extra work to feel at home, to have fun in that. Now, if you ask me, most of the time, wherever I go, I feel such a possibility to connect that I feel at home. And then most obviously in the places that I choose, like Lisbon here, Morocco, where I do a number of projects still, places that I had lived in the past. I was in Rwanda to present my book in October, and it felt so good to reconnect, even though I had left on a note that kind of felt like, okay, I need to close this chapter. Actually, it's still home. France is still home. The US is still home. So I feel like there's a point where it's not even shallow to say, oh, I'm a citizen of the world. No, I deeply connect with those places where I had to kind of polish myself and my approach and confront my otherness and the others too. And it's always stimulating. And again, from the moment there's a kindness and sincerity and authenticity in wanting to relate, then I feel at home. And I even feel at home in conversations with people that I don't even share, you know, political views with. And I can give you examples of that if you want. Back 2 years ago, it was still in this process of writing the book. I was in visiting Puerto Rico. Just wanted to have a break, really. And I stayed in a guest house that was owned by someone who is a supporter of Trump, and you know, it doesn't believe immigration is good for the US and so on and so forth. And it was a time where it was still a question mark for me of whether I would join my sister who had moved to the US or not. But he was very curious about me because he heard from his wife that there was someone coming from Morocco and, oh, you have to engage with her. She's in education and blah, blah, blah. We had a whole conversation where he shared his own journey. He's from a family. His mother was with six other brothers and sisters. His mother was an immigrant in the US, first comer, Italian, entrepreneur, and so on. And in him sharing the history of his family and kind of trying to relate with the person that was in front of him, I kind of felt like, you know, it's human to human. And so as much as he upfront says, well, people come to the US only to take advantage and immigration is bad and so on, which obviously I disagree with, we still had a very interesting, heartfelt, kind conversation. So, and I felt at home in that. So that felt great.
Yeah, I think the difference is, as you relate to, is like seeing the person and having it be a human to human connection rather than issue to issue. I think too often we want to battle out the issues, the differences, and we miss the whole point of having the human connection. And that's where we're going to help grow, because sometimes when we get to that place where we're having the human connection, we can then see the reason why someone believes the way they believe, the experiences they've had that make them think the way they do. And we can begin to understand, well, maybe there's some validity to how they came to the conclusions that they do, or some valid concerns they have. And we can also share our experiences, and they can see some truth behind what we are bringing to the table. And then that's where we get that growth. And the hope then comes in, where we say, wow, we can do better as a society.
Absolutely.
Now, getting back to that idea of like owning your awkward and just like making it work for you, which clearly you have done. You've written the book about it. You have traveled the world. Did you know, was there a point where you, because you started out talking about how when you were in Morocco and you were in a scenario where there were people from many cultures and expats, and in the different schools you were in, you were exposed to all of these things. How do you feel that that really set you up to be able to be this comfortable wherever you go? And also, do you feel like, was there a point where you went from, I feel like I'm surrounded by all these people, and then who knows which group I really fit into? And then you went, wow, this is really, I fit into all the groups, and this is a good thing. Was there a switch there, or was it just comfortable from the beginning?
I would say, I mean, when I look back at my youth, I'd say it's a very warm place with a lot of love and with a lot of question asked and with a lot of seeds planted. And I have to, you know, constantly thank my parents because in witnessing them also kind of navigate these worlds and also being clear on their values, you know. Both of them, my late father was a doctor, and he introduced a number of things to Morocco in terms of medicine for workers, helping, you know, adopt legislations for that, and so on and so forth. Yeah, other expertise that he had as well, and it took me time to kind of realize how important that legacy was. And on this, for my mother, she was a literature French literature professor. She's retired now, but very early on, she made me read, or she gave me access at least to her master thesis that was about the position of women in French Moroccan literature. And I found her so bold in the writing, so like very much the feminist. I kind of I had to ask her, like, how is it that you're married to this man who's my father? And what's the
How does that
how is
work,
it
right?
how does that work, right? Yeah. And then you so that's the yeah, that's my parents. And then their friends, some of them were French Moroccan couples, some of them were other expats, and some of them were Moroccan Jews. I mean, I remember celebrating all sorts of celebrations in my youth, the Muslim celebrations, the Jewish celebrations, the Christmas, and so on and so forth. So it was very joyful. And I think if anything, people really had a sense of wanting to have a good life and connect and take any occasion to share, you know, share food and thoughts and aspirations. So that was the Morocco I knew. And then it took me a little bit of time to start to realize that the rest of society was not necessarily as open. And then in some places you could, there was definitely no talking about alcohol or dressing up in a Western manner or you know, going out and roaming down the streets on your own as a woman and like all those restrictions. So I started to start to feel the tension between Western context and a more Muslim context. And then with time and with going to France, I started realizing that even the French education that I had received was kind of conservative too. Like it's not as open. It's full of a colonial legacy as well. It's full of looking down on Africa, North Africa, what belongs to us too. And so in unpacking all of this and kind of getting confronted here and there, I had to kind of create my own approach to feel in integrity with myself and connecting with respect to the other. So it's interesting because now I'm more and more able to have conversations that are questioning rules that people have. I'll give you an example. I was chatting with my sister the other day about one of our cousins on my mom's side who's, you know, relatively open, but still like the Moroccan cousin who wants to watch over his cousins. And what are you putting on Instagram? And what is this tattoo over your
Oh, sure.
chest? And I'm like, I'm 34 now and I'm on the other side of the planet. And he calls this uncle and this cousin to ask about what am I wearing in the context of a festival. And it's just an example of a situation that makes me smile now, but back in the 20 years ago would have triggered me so much, or even 10 years ago, or even before I wrote this book, and before I started to make it really a point of, hey, this is me, these are my boundaries. We can be very loving and kind to one another, but we have to be very loving and kind, otherwise it's not a conversation that you're ready for. That's fine. When you grow up, we're gonna talk, you and I. And I'm happy, and that's the message I want to send to so many other women that may have these challenges too. You know, there's a lot of pressure on Arab women, African women, women from the global south, and probably also Western women too, and kind of having to please everyone and play by the book. And society is unforgiving sometimes. But yeah, in owning who you truly are, and even in being different and wanting to be different, it's a gift you give to yourself and it's a gift you give to the world.
Yeah, I love that. And what really stood out is how you said connecting with respect or with integrity, where you have to both have your boundaries and say, no, this is, I'm okay with me. This is how I'm coming out to the world. You're not going to change that, but we can still have a respectful conversation. Or like you said, if you're not going to have that conversation with respect, then come back when you're ready for it. Yeah.
Yeah, and you
So
know, there's something to say about the fact that with social media and having this immediate confrontation to an image or a projection of someone else, without contextualizing a conversation that is based on principles of respect and attentive listening and curiosity, it can foster a kind of a sense of confrontation all the time and overwhelm. And I think for another message that I want to send to everyone listening is really to hone in the skill of creating space within oneself to be able to connect with one another with this enthusiasm, this appreciation of the miraculous being they are, and the miraculous being you are yourself, and the even more miraculous connection that can ensue in a setting.
yeah. Now, one thing that's intriguing to me is how you mentioned earlier, and what I want to hear about your book now. You mentioned earlier how you wrote that from the mindset of kind of what would you tell the younger you, but also who is that woman out there, that person who is in that space that you used to be. And I think that's such a beautiful way to approach what we're giving to the world, because it's so easy to sit in a place of regret of, I wish I knew all these things 10, 20 years ago. However, how powerful is it to share what we know now with people who are in that space right now? Because, time has moved for us, but other people are in a different space in their journey, and the place they're at in time needs to hear that. So I love that approach that you're bringing with this book. Tell us all about it. Tell us what you have in the book. There are links below. You guys have been teased with this idea of this book that Hannah wrote. So click on those links, get your copy, and let's hear about it.
Yeah, thanks for this question. I think that the purpose and the aspiration of the book being other, the beauty and power of being an outsider, is truly to bring hope and strategy to future generations at large, and in particular Black and women, Black, Indigenous, and women of color, with the sense of the contribution and the creative leadership that you can develop is truly needed in this time, in this time with the challenges that we face. And so the book is full of anecdotes, but it's also full of methodologies. So each chapter has an exercise, some of them a bit more serious, some of them a bit more playful, but I've tried them in many different contexts, and it's always bringing super interesting conversations. So about people's identity, projections, self-perceived limitations, how that played out in their professional development, in their personal development. But when you bring people back to their hearts, there's also an exercise about writing a love letter to a bi woke that has inspired them, and then writing a love letter to yourself, which sometimes is even more difficult. I've encountered so beautiful, like, situations that were so beautiful, people eventually holding one another and crying in each other's arms in a workshop. Or another exercise that is more about dance and embodiment and this notion of sensuous knowledge, which is a notion that is developed by a number of Afro-feminists that I mentioned in the book, of we need to redefine what knowledge is and kind of move away from this Euro-patriarchal approach that is very rational and that moves away or puts away everything else that is more embodied and intuitive. And I think it's quite radical of an approach. And it is also something that we need, and kind of if we want to connect more with nature and develop a system that is more respectful of Mother Nature, then we definitely need to use our senses and kind of move away from everything we've learned that we feel is applicable. Like, let's listen to what the trees have to say, what animals have to say. And the thing is, science is catching up, because we are now in a moment in history where we can do this. Some scientists have developed AI algorithms to be able to make sense of what whales are communicating with one another. We're at this time where other musicians that are also geeky and on the side are able to capture the sounds of trees and develop some music with it. And so it's a very exciting time where a lot of what was perceived as, the dreams of hippies eventually are colliding with the advancements of technology and science. And so it's then, for me, the time to unleash this creativity and kind of fully own who we are, to fully offer it to the rest of the world, but with this perspective as again of let's develop systems that work for everyone and every being.
Your point about science being able to explain kind of the hippiness of the communication of the trees, I think that's so critical, because we want to explain or justify everything, or decide, well, should it be intuition? Should it be more this way, or should it be the other way? Where is science the right way? And there's no reason that one couldn't back the other, and that one couldn't support. And we might know and feel something, and then find the science or the evidence that supports it and proves it in that regard. But the fact that that answer isn't there yet shouldn't hold us back from leaning into the exploration and the process. And that's just such a beautiful connection when we can come together that way, because that transcends those conversations. If you can sit and just listen to music with someone else, you don't even have to share words.
Yes, I absolutely. Music is far more telling than words, many, many times. And just to come back to this notion of awkwardness, in my journey, I'm gonna have a sip. I came across so many people that had started quite conventionally, studying the right thing, becoming doctors, earning a lot of money for stability and safety and so on, and doing professionally everything that they could right. And then eventually something happened that enabled them to open up to new forms of knowledge. And I'm thinking of people that have switched from being a consultant or to being an energy healer, or Western doctors that eventually started to open up to indigenous medicine and develop their shamanic side. And we see a lot more of these unconventional paths. So, and they're rich because they're tapping onto really multiple sources of wisdom. And we need that because, again, we're at the time where challenges are becoming really complex. It's all intertwined. We're talking about polycrisis, but what I want to talk about is poly opportunity. And poly opportunity only happens if you blend in your strengths and really are open to cross-pollinating with other, I want to say, worlds of wisdom and cosmologies and sources of knowledge and expertise.
Yeah, you mentioned people checking all the boxes for success, and kind of what are the reasons that you follow a career path or choose a certain job or live in a certain space or have a certain partner. And all of those boxes on paper look like the right boxes to check. But time and again, I meet people who realize that the one box they can't check that way is feeling fulfilled and feeling happy. And then it's frustrating because it's like, wait, I did all the right things. How come that one doesn't get filled in? And it's because you have to step out of it and you have to be open to these other art forms, other ways of connecting. And that's where we find the meaning.
Yeah, and also how do we really listen to the wisdom of our soul? So that's why I mean, in my case, meditation helps a lot because then I can really hear myself speak and have this inner guidance at times where I need to make a decision, or at times where I need to just recharge with my own energy when I've been, as a community builder, as a professional, connected with so many other people, and it's great, and it's really enriching. But then, really having this inner compass, you can work on your values, you can work on, more of a rational tools, and you can also just create space to listen to your own voice. I think meditation helps very much. I think some other practices that are gentle and that are just nourishing for oneself are a great approach too. And everyone has their own ways. Some people are able to meditate in running, for instance, or in other activities, and they get a lot of satisfaction from it and a lot of inner peace, and that brings a lot of interesting ideas to life.
Yeah, I've been in that place where you do the thing that someone tells you to do to find the peace, and then I've ended up frustrated because I didn't find that peace. And that's one lesson I've learned, is you have to find the way that brings you peace. Maybe it is running, maybe it's sitting on a park bench in the rain crying, maybe it's being outside on a beach on a sunny day, or sitting alone in a quiet space, closing your eyes with a candle lit. Like, find the thing. And when you try some things, number one, don't be afraid to try different things and in order to find the thing where you find that click. But also, don't be afraid to try them several times. Don't think that, okay, it didn't work the first time, so I gave up. go back and try again. Do it a few times, and if you're really not getting that sense, then try something different. Try that a few times, because we are all different. But that sense that you mentioned of nourishment, you know, it's not just in what we eat. It's with the people that we surround ourselves with the things we do to find peace. And it's so critical for us to live a healthy life.
And I would add to this with this capacity to connect with your creative power, because yes, you have those recipes that maybe some other people have tried, but maybe you can even blend some of it and give yourself permission to imagine other forms. And then you might even, develop an approach that other people would want to follow. That's exactly what happened with any tradition of any sort, any invention of any sort, to be honest. And so creativity is key. Anything that makes you feel creative or empowered in your creativity, I would say do it and do it more and do it wholeheartedly and just, surrender to this expensive energy.
I love that. Well, before we go, is there anything else you want to make sure we touch on? And I'm going to ask you for some advice in a moment.
Well, I love that your approach is awkwardness, because it's something that so many people relate to, in trying to talk about situations that either are heavier and they want to make it seem lighter. I felt awkward in connecting with my ex-partner, for instance, or I felt awkward being the only person in the room that was wearing a skirt. Sometimes we try to diminish things because we don't have the vocabulary for it, and it's great and it's fine. I think it's a fantastic door opening to maybe something bigger that we want to address. So I want to say awkwardness is really a place where you have to dig in, You have to dig in to start feeling more comfortable with. Is awkwardness your otherness? Is awkwardness something you want to heal or build on or move away from? Awkwardness asks a lot of questions, and I think it's really key to just unpack it. So my main message would be, just start unpacking your awkwardness, delve into your creativity, open doors for yourself and for everyone else. Yeah, those would be kind of three key messages to close this conversation.
I love that. I was going to ask for what advice you'd give people or what challenge. I think you nailed it right there. So I think I love what you're doing. You're such a good example of how to be open to connecting with people from every different walk of life. And you not only talk about it, you do it, and that it's making a huge difference in the world.
Thank you so much, Andy. And also, I want to say, please reach out if you want to have an awkward or not awkward conversation
Yeah.
with
So I'm glad you mentioned that. Where is the best place for people to find you? Because sometimes people are more active in one place than the other.
Yeah, well, I'm very active on social media, on LinkedIn in particular, and Instagram. So feel free to send me a note. And then, of course, if you want to have more in-depth conversation, you can send me an email. You can reach out to Andy, and then he can introduce you. I will do my best to schedule something. I just have to say that next week I'm going to go to India for a book tour, so for a month. So I may be on a very different time zone, and then shortly after I'll be back in Morocco because I'm organizing a festival with the House of Beautiful Businesses called Between the Two of Us. So in this whole context, I will surely make time, but just know that I'm moving across the globe.
Moving around you're staying true to your journey, which is amazing, and that's it's great to see that not only has that been your journey, but it continues to be, and I can't wait to see what time zone, what continent you pop up in next, and I'm gonna watch for a chance to be in the same space so we can connect.
With pleasure. Thank you so much, Andy.
Thank you so much, Hannah. Everyone else, be sure that you go out there, embrace your otherness, own your awkwardness. Follow Hannah, click the links below to get on her social media, reach out, get the book, of course, and as always, own your awkward.
Thank you so much for listening in for today's show. Be sure to visit awkwardcareer.com to continue your journey. And of course, please like, subscribe, and share with your friends so they can find their awkward side and learn how to own it.